I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Let's head out to the Western Hotline because I'm interested to get some thoughts on the Sabres and also what's going on around the NHL with the labor talks going on with David Pagnotta, who's very connected with everything from the fourthperiod.com. He joins us right now on the Western Hotline. David, thanks again for taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us, and welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
So obviously, with the way that everything's kind of going, there's some speculation that maybe that an official agreement could come at any point this weekend. Are we expecting something maybe as early as today in terms of an announcement on everything that's kind of going on?
Yeah, we could certainly hear something later this afternoon. There's still some fine-tuning that needs to be completed for some of the points that they've been negotiating back and forth on the CBA between the NHL and the NHLPA. But by all accounts, the goal is to get something wrapped up today, maybe tomorrow morning at the latest, and then allow for a vote over the course of the weekend, spanning the weekend, that'll consist of not only the CBA terms, but also the return to play plan and everything that encompasses it, the testing protocols, the travel, the hub cities officially getting a vote on, in addition to all the CBA discussions. So they're hoping by Monday we have everything locked in, voted on by the NHLPA membership, and we can start moving towards returning to play.
Have talks between the NHLPA and the NHL been generally peaceful? Because we've heard about everything that's been talked about all throughout this time and finalizing hub cities and also possible extensions with the CBA. But how the talks been generally between both sides? And how important was it to get this CBA extension done now compared to maybe next season or a couple of years from now, or when, you know, before avoiding a lockout possibly? But how important was it to get it done now?
Yeah, but because of the times that we're all in, because of the economic ramifications of the COVID pandemic and everything, the fact that we've had to push the season effectively, just cancel out the rest of the regular season, the financial ramifications involved relate to about a $1.1 billion loss for the National Hockey League. And that would take years to recover over that span. So you're almost taking advantage of the opportunity to force yourself to have CBA negotiations, to work on a four-year extension, basically so that you're taking into account all the losses that are being attributed now. So for the financial hardships that everyone's dealing with, they're trying to create the easiest way to come back to get over and through the dollars that are being lost across the board. So with 2 years left on the current CBA, an additional 4 years that are going to be tagged on top of it, they've strategically created a way so that they can minimize the losses moving forward and then return to normalcy, probably, quite frankly, in about 3-4 years, to keep track of how finances have been going. Remember, in a couple of years, there's going to be the U.S. television rights that are going to be coming in, the new deals that the NHL is going to finalize, the digital broadcast rights as well are going to play a big factor into that. Seattle entering the league two seasons from now, and their dollars that are factoring in from ticket sales and merch and all of that will start to go towards hockey-related revenue. So at that point, we're going to start to see an influx of dollars, which is a great sign, and it'll bring us back to normal. But now, these next 2-3 seasons were imperative for the league and the players to figure out so that they can minimize losses across the board.
David Pagnotta from thefourthperiod.com joining us here on the Wester Hotline with the latest updates from what's going on with the CBA negotiations between the NHL and the NHLPA going on right now around the NHL. So what protocols are of the most interest and most discussed throughout this entire negotiating period with the Phase 3 and Phase 4 protocols? Because obviously with getting back with these players to training camps and with COVID-19 testing being very, very imperative with trying to move forward and get play back on the ice, and with the spike in COVID-19 cases in the United States especially, what's been the biggest talking points with these protocols in these negotiations?
Well, first of all, it was basically solidifying the hub cities that made the most sense, that were the safest involved. Now, you know, this time last week, it was Vancouver and Vegas that the two sides actually agreed upon, and they were ready to move forward. But Vancouver local health officials started to raise some questions as to what would happen if there were positive cases that were to occur going into the bubble or in, you know, the middle of phase four. And that would have resulted, from their perspective, in shutting things down until everybody was negative again, which was not something the league is prepared to do. So they had to make that modification. The rising cases in Nevada, in Las Vegas, played a huge factor earlier this week. Concerns raised from the NHLPA over that. So we go to Edmonton, we go to Toronto. That'll be made official once everything is voted on. But that was the biggest thing, to kind of minimize the risk in returning to play and going to what would appear to be some of the safest markets in the National Hockey League. Now, on top of that, it's the testing protocols. It's maintaining everybody's health. Remember that we're not going to get into the bubble. The players aren't moving into the bubble until the middle of phase three. So they're going to start their training camps in their respective cities, and then about 10 days, give or take, after they begin, they're going to go to those hub cities, their respective hub cities, and start to enter that bubble. Now, there is a chance that we're going to hear more over the next couple of weeks of players testing positive for this. But even if it were to happen going into the bubble, they're creating basically a quarantine zone in each of these hub cities to kind of allow everybody to remedy, get through it, go back to testing negative, and get it out of their system. And then we're going to be, you know, fully underway for phase four to get games going, which is probably going to be around the start of August.
How do you think the return to play format is going to look in Toronto and in Edmonton and the plan overall? And are you confident that this season's able to get in and be finished and that a Stanley Cup's going to be awarded at the end?
It sounds like it. It sounds like everybody is really confident that they're able to do that by entering these hub markets. Remember that basically for Edmonton and Toronto, they're going to basically seclude an entire area that is going to be cut off from the general population as best they can. So it's effectively done to minimize the possibility of outside, you know, people who are testing positive for this to enter that bubble. So for the league, to make sure that they can secure and safely have everything in place, not just in the beginning of phases three and four, but moving forward in order for there to not be any complications going through this, so that we can award a Stanley Cup at the beginning of October. That's kind of how things seem to be lined up. Probably going to, like I said, the beginning of August is probably when we're going to get games going. I know July 10th was the target date to start training camps. I believe that's being pushed a few days to the 13th or 14th. And then about 3 weeks after that is when we're going to start the games again within the qualifying round, and then moving on to to rounds one, two, and so on.
Last thing I have about the negotiations and talks surrounding NHL talk, with the participation in the Olympics for the next two Olympics in 2022 and 2026, was this one of the main talking points in getting a new CBA deal extended, or was this more of just kind of a side talk that kind of heated up and then eventually it was agreed upon that, yeah, the NHL players can go back to playing in the Olympics for the next two Olympics and then, you know, we'll get a deal done? How important were those talks as a whole part of this?
Yeah, the NHLPA basically brought those up right at the beginning to say, look, we're going to extend this. We want to be able to return, to have our athletes return and representing their countries at the Winter Olympics in Beijing and in Milan. So this was certainly a talking point that was ongoing throughout these discussions. The players really emphasized the desire to represent their countries. Obviously, there's only a handful of guys. It's not the entire, you know, membership of the league, 800 players that are going to be able to do that. But they really wanted to fight to return to the Olympics and to get those games underway. Now, both of those are going to happen in February, and I think the league kind of understood that given these times and the fact that we've got to push playback and, you know, probably award a Stanley Cup in October, that taking 3 weeks out of the month of February by pushing things back isn't the end of the world, as was the thought process earlier. To interrupt play in the middle of the season was always a concern for NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman and the owners. But given the circumstances today and the desire for the game to come back, and a lot of people obviously wanting to see hockey again, there's a bit more of a leniency, I guess you could say, from the NHL in accepting those terms and allowing players to go to the Olympics again.
David Pagnotta from thefourthperiod.com joining us here on the West Her Hotline. Want to move on now to some Sabres talk, and you had an article up at thefourthperiod.com. The article is the Sabres must be playoff contenders heading, you know, they must be playoff contenders next season. So how important is it for the Sabres to right the ship this offseason and heading into the 2020-21 season? Like, what is the level of, like, DEPCOM, you know, what is it, DEPCOM, like, 1, 2, 3? Where are you at with how important it is for the Sabres to get this right?
Yeah, I think it's paramount, to be honest. I think it's huge. That's the goal. Now, you can't guarantee that this team or any team is going to be moving forward and you know, guaranteeing a position in the playoffs at this point in the year in the offseason. You can't do that. But you can do your best to move forward and build a contender. And that's effectively the mandate that's being put in place here for the Buffalo Sabres and for new GM Kevin Adams. You've got to be able to be in a position to get this team the talent, the added talent that it needs, make whatever changes you need in order to propel this team into playoff contender status. If you can battle for the wild card spot and you're playing meaningful games down the stretch a month to go in the regular season, something that this team hasn't done in, I think, 8 years, that's the goal. I mean, you're not going to flip a switch and all of a sudden become a Stanley Cup contender next season. It has to be slow played, but you can accelerate that slow play by making the right moves in order to get to contender status for playoffs, and then at that point, you build from there, because there are a lot of people in this organization that have been there a while, the last, you know, 4, 5, 6 years, that are obviously tired of this, and they certainly want to get back into playing meaningful games towards the end of the season and beyond. That has to be the mandate for this team going into next season.
So with the Sabres going into the offseason, one of their main objectives is to try and find that second-line center behind Jack Eichel. And they had that second-line center, but that guy was traded away, obviously, to the Blues, and he ended up winning the Conn Smythe Trophy, the Selke Trophy, and winning a Stanley Cup in his very first year in St. Louis. What options do the Sabres have to try and attack that number two center hole that they have?
Well, I mean, look, there's a few. You could obviously make a trade. You could try to sign somebody once free agency opens up, which looks like November 1st is when that's going to happen. So you can go in those two directions. But you've got salary cap implications. The cap's not going up. It's being stagnant, $81.5 million the next two seasons, and then it's going to go up $1 million after that. So there's not a lot of wiggle room from a salary cap perspective. And with what you've got, with any overages that have to be attributed to next season, you're fairly limited in what you can do. And again, you can't go out and make all of these signings. We know that hasn't worked in the past. So this is a team that's been in a good position going into this void that's there at the 2C position. Dylan Cousins, everybody I've talked to, says that this guy's ready to make that jump. He's ready to enter the NHL to compete for a spot next season. If that's truly the case, and you can assist in other areas, you need another top six winger to enter the equation. There's no question about that. You've got other holes on that roster. You've got a guy in Dylan Cousins that for the next, you know, year or two is going to be making a significant case to be your 2C. And quite frankly, you know, he can't go to the AHL next year. He can go either to the WHL or to Buffalo. A lot of people I've talked to said he's done with the WHL. There's not going to be much more progress that could be made from a talent development perspective. He's got to get up to the pro side. So if he can compete and hold his own, which I would anticipate, I would give him that opportunity, providing you're cushioning him or complimenting him with the right wingers in place. I think that's the direction that needs to be taken so that you can focus on other holes on that roster.
What would be the next big issue that the Sabres have on their roster going forward outside of the second line center is the biggest one, but where's your next plan of attack for this team?
You got to get some offense going here. You've got to be able to expand on your offense. And you've got to be able to improve between the pipes. I mean, those those are two big asks. Quite frankly, those are three big asks if you're including the 2C position into that. And you've got a few years before Luukkonen is going to be ready. You're certainly projecting in the right direction, but you've got a few years here that you still need. If you're competing now, you've got to upgrade yourself between the pipes as much as you need some offense. So from my perspective, if Dylan Cousins is your guy, you've got to go out there. You've got to get somebody in the top six, a right winger ideally, to play either on the first or second line. You move Reinhardt on to the other side, whichever line that is, and you look to make some moves between the pipes. There are going to be some goaltenders that are going to be available, some quality goaltenders that are going to be available this offseason, whether it's free agency or through the trade market. Matt Murray for the Pittsburgh Penguins is certainly somebody that a lot of teams are taking a look at and would like to pursue once Pittsburgh's season is done. That might be a direction to certainly go in.
Yeah, I did want to ask you about the goaltending situation just with Carter Hutton having the vision problems that he had talked about with Lance Osowski from the Buffalo News, and just what options maybe are available afterwards. It's certainly one that is going to be a big problem, or not a big problem, but just something to focus on heading into the offseason. One other area that I wanted to ask you about is defense, because the Sabres have Rasmus Dahlin, obviously. Joakim Harju was able to jump up for them and play some big roles for them in his first year in Buffalo. But the two names that come up this offseason, one is Brandon Montour. He's only been here a year and a half, but the numbers that maybe were expected to increase after he was acquired from Anaheim have stayed relatively the same in Buffalo as they were in Anaheim. And then, of course, the other name is Rasmus Ristolainen, who seemed like has been talked about for eons here, and the opportunity to move him. So how do you attack the movement of defensemen for this team? Do you see Montour and Ristolainen moving? Do you see one of the two moving, or do you think that they decide to stand pat, keep those guys for another year and see how it goes? I mean, Montour's obviously a restricted free agent, so he needs a new contract, and maybe giving him another shorter deal contract would probably be the better option here.
Yeah, and quite frankly, I think he's going to re-up to a shorter-term deal, maybe a one or two, depending on, that's effectively going to be the landscape across the board for a lot of teams and a lot of players, given the salary cap implications of, the finances that have been lost here. So you're probably looking at a short-term deal for him to enter next season. Rasmus Ristolainen is a player that a lot of teams have some interest in. He's somebody that, like you talked about, his name's been out there forever. And the frustration that he has voiced, I guess, with his time in Buffalo over the last little while, I think it's time to take a serious look at moving him. He's one of your best tradable assets at this point. If you have to add to it, so be it. But again, because of the dollars, because of the salary cap, because you have to be certainly frugal to an extent on how you're spending your dollars, with a $5.4 million cap hit and a few years left on his deal, packaging Ristolainen up to get some assistance up front within your top six is certainly something that I think they're going to explore and take a look at. There are some quality defensemen that are out there from a kind of middle of the pack perspective, number three, number four, number five guys. You're going to be downgrading, so to speak, by moving Ristolainen on that blue line or off that blue line, but you can bring in some serviceable quality defensemen in your own zone. You've got some offensive guys that can share that responsibility. You've got to be able to be responsible in your own end. And I think a guy, whether it's Joel Edmondson or somebody to that effect, would probably be a target for the Buffalo Sabres.
And last thing I've got on my plate here for you, David, is the eighth overall pick. Sabres, of course, with the draft lottery, fall one spot, and I won't mention the yet-to-be-determined team to pick number one, because, I think it was a weird decision by the NHL to go forward with that this year, but I'll leave that be. But what do the Sabres do with the eighth overall pick? They've got a number of options that they're going to have there. This year's top 10 class is pretty darn good with talent, and they have a couple options. They could try to move that pick to get a top-quality second-line center that they absolutely need, or they could stick with that pick, get a really good player that could be ready for the NHL in another year or two. Just your thoughts on what maybe they should go and what direction they should go with that pick.
It really depends what direction the team plans on going immediately. Do they feel they have the assets, the moves, whether it's trade or through free agency, to bolster this team immediately going into next season? Yeah, this is a deep draft. There's no question. I'd say your top 12, 13 within this draft. There are going to be some really good hockey players in the National Hockey League. It might even extend beyond that. This is going to be a very, very good draft class. So it's certainly looking that way. We'll see how everybody does, but this is certainly looking to be one of the best draft classes in a long time. So you've got a lot of depth. You're going to have a lot of options to pick from at the eight position, whether it's, you know, a winger that can put the puck in the net. Quite frankly, somebody like Alexander Holtz has a heck of a shot. He's got a heck of an eye for the net. He would certainly be an offensive weapon that I think the Buffalo Sabres would want to take a look at. You've got goaltending to take a look at there as well. Or, like you said, you explore the trade route. Again, all of this is going to be dependent on what they feel they can do come the offseason. Maybe they make moves ahead of the draft, you know, the day before, a couple days before. That would help dictate what direction they can go in. They're going to have a lot of options. There's no question about that. I suggested, you know, possibly moving that, talk to Pittsburgh, see how Matt Murray is. If your mandate is truly to make a lot of noise next season, you've got to improve on that position right away. But again, you can go in a variety of different directions here. Either way, especially from a draft perspective, you're going to get a heck of a player. So you've got to understand what that value is if you're looking to move it.
I got to admit, David, I read your mock draft that you had, and I'm not too sure how many Sabres fans are going to be happy with taking a goaltender number 8 overall. I know that Askarov is a very good goaltending prospect, maybe one of the best prospects that the NHL has seen in quite some years. But, I mean, I think Sabres fans would probably give a very big sigh of anguish over that type of pick.
Oh, I got some interesting responses for that. There's no there's no question on Twitter, and I get it. I totally do. I mean, again, it depends what direction you want to go in. If you feel you can make some additions, if you feel Dylan Cousins is ready, if you feel you can bring in a top six offensive threat via trade, you got to look at other areas, I think. I mean, you can certainly load up. There's no question about that. But to see a player like Askarov, who, like you said, is one of the best goaltending prospects we've seen in years, might be a good direction to go. I know you've got Lukanen, and he's projected to be a really good number one goaltender in the National Hockey League. Gives you options moving forward.
Well, David, I know that you're very busy with your schedule and following everything that's going on in the NHL right now, but I really do appreciate you taking the time to join me here on WGR this morning. Enjoy your weekend. Happy belated Canada Day to you up north, and hope you enjoy your long weekend here.
All right, you too. Thanks so much. Happy 4th.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.